soul. The soul of a Muslim, a mu'min, should be also pure. Because when you die, you will be taken into the presence of your Lord. Your Lord is pure. And he only accepts the one who is pure. Otherwise, he will be sent to the hellfire to be purified there. That is why fasting is a great, let's say, golden chance or opportunity for every one of us to, inshallah, purify ourselves. In terms of both bodily purification and also spiritually and mentally purification. But the most important purification is the spiritually purification that we should acquire in this holy month. Otherwise, just controlling, for example, not eating from the early morning till the evening, it's not something very much, let's say, valuable. Okay. The thing is that during the day, during the night, always you should fast in its perfect manner.
And also, you said this purification is the, you know, you said that this purification is done in Ramadan in, and it's the highest shape,
level of purification.
Level of it, the highest level of
yes,
it.
Yes.
So, you know, most people say that, for example, I don't, you know, this is the something that many people say and many people have it. You know, they go to the extremes. In Holy Ramadan, they do their best to purify, and sometimes they hurt themselves. Or the other part, other thing. I want you, because most people have it. I see it around. You know, I think many people are suffering from it. Just anything, any thoughts, any comments?
Yeah, let me answer your question by a narration from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Once the Holy Prophet was saying to his companions that in the Day of Judgment, a group of believers, a group of people will come to the Resurrection Day in the Day of Judgment, and they will they are presented and they will talk about their actions, and their actions are like mountains from good deeds and everything that they have done in their lifetime. But the command will come and say that, okay, put them in the fire. All of these people should be sent into the fire. Salman asked the Holy Prophet, oh, the Holy Prophet, what was the reason? What did they do? What kind of people are they? The Prophet said, these are the people who prayed a lot, said their prayers in the right time. They had been fasting for their whole life, and they had lots of good deeds. But at the time that something haram or unlawful and illegal was presented to them, they usually took it, and they usually and they went for it. You see, so like what? I mean, when haram, and kind of as the brother said, rightly, when haram look comes, and I mean, we are in an examination in status of test of having a haram look at a person or in an mahram. Or something which is haram to be eaten, I mean, to be drank even. I mean, while, for example, something has been haram, or it was the right of another person. So having a fast or fasting by itself, I mean, is only one aspect of it, is not the whole thing.
You mean they grab something haram, or they can't appreciate it?
Very true.
They can't appreciate it's haram. What is it? I mean, they can't distinguish between something which is halal or haram. They don't have this ability or this faculty.
Look,
what do you mean?
Look, we know that the thing that we are receiving is halal or haram. I mean, first, we have this knowledge. Second, I want to say we have to be careful of the input that we give to our soul and to our body.
Important.
Both of them are important. I mean, to the soul and to the body. Like, for example, look at the airplane that actually moves very fast. Has a certain special kind of fuel that can be injected into the airplane itself. Not any any form of fuel can be given to this jet or, let's say, airplane, because it is among the purest and the highest quality of the fuel, right? Mm-hmm. So with this pure food that you are receiving, your actions, your fasting becomes meaningful, right?
Then inputs are so important.
Yeah. So the input that we give to our body and soul, they are very important. For example, some of the rights that are ignored, like, for example, something is in our shoulder, like the khums of our mal, the khums of
you
our...
You know, speaking of input, you said...
Yeah. Now it's, again, it's not only the input...
It's very important, you know, because the month of Ramadan is all about controlling the inputs.
Very true.
So you have to control your inputs. You have to... Be careful what you
also
take in.
There are some obligations on us through the input that we have some outputs that we need to present, like the right of, for example, homes, which we have to pay, the zakat that is on our shoulder that we need to pay. So just saying prayers and fasting without having these considerations and cautions is not enough. So we need to have a comprehensive look on the whole acts of worship and know about the philosophy of them. Just, I mean, depriving ourselves from eating and drinking is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if that we have just tolerated a hard time for ourselves. So we need to have the philosophy behind them and to act upon what we have been ordered. Yes, if we need to, take the output of this psalm or fasting, which is sabr or patience. So have we considered and have we looked at a comprehensive look on all the issues?
You mentioned something. This is very important that you realize that that the meaning behind or philosophy behind what you do and what your actions.
Yeah.
This is very important because some people are doing it and they don't know why. Mm. They're just doing it without knowing why. And very good, well said. Thank you. Also, any last words, anything you want to add, you think is missing and you want to say, dear Rouhani, you or Mr. Brother Ali, anything which is missing you would like to add that I didn't talk about?
Yeah, about just some of the good benefits that fasting has for the people is this, that it improves our self-controlling, our ability in self-controlling. It improves different kinds of capacities and abilities in us. Sometimes we are not aware of many of the capacities and abilities that we have. But when we fast, we understand that, okay, how greatly we can do lots of things,
of course,
you know? And it opens like windows to the unseen, let's say, aspects of our life. It shows us some of the capabilities and capacities.
You begin to realize your potentials.
You know that, what great potentials you have, and you can live in accordance to those potentials in the future. That's why fasting will have lots of benefits for the people as well.
Well said, thank you.
One last point that I want to mention is that that I have learned it from the famous hadith that has been said again in the khutbah or sermon of the Holy Prophet at the end of the holy month of Sha'ban, at the end of month of Sha'ban, that the Holy Prophet said, فَإِنَّ الشَّقِي مَنْ حُرِمَ غُفْرَانَ اللَّهِ فِي هَذَا الشَّهْرِ الْعَظِيمِ. That is, the unfortunate is the one who has deprived himself from the benefits of this great month. So this month is not an ordinary month. We need to know about the value, the importance, the greatness of this month. This is a month that we can start our self-building. I mean, to work on ourselves and to just to forgive those who have a right on our shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
If we want Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us, at least we need to do something to make ourselves very similar to the act of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to forgive whatever is on our shoulder. I mean, to forgive everyone who has a right on our shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And to benefit and to value every single moment of this month, and to be to be blessed from the blessings of this whole month, and to inshallah become a receptive, and let's make ourselves a receptive Allah's blessings and the reign of His rahmah in this month.
I hope that happens, and thank you for all that you said. I think you meant that by forgiving, we open, we let ourselves to give.
Very true.
By forgiving, we are open to take. We are open to receive, and this is very important. Thank you. That was all the time we have. Ramadan is the month of Imam Ali. Also, one entitled "The Speaking Quran," as to speak. In this special occasion, we can ask him to help us find the way. As you have heard the famous quote from Prophet Muhammad a lot, that he is the only gate to all the wisdom. Thank you for all the thing, for all the, this time you gave to us. Hope you enjoy your time. May the Almighty bless you all. Farewell. Bye-bye. Allahu, Allahu, Ya Rabbi, Ya Allah. Allahu, Ya Rabbi, Ya Allah. La ilaha.
ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, Muhammadun Rasulullah, Muhammadun Rasulullah. أرجو رضاك يا الله أنت الرحيم يا الله هبني عطاك يا الله أنت الكريم منك العطاء يا الله أنت العظيم يا الله فيك الرجاء يا الله أنت الحليم
الرحمن الستار ملك الملك الغفار الوهاب المنان
الرحمن الستار ملك الملك الغفار الوهاب المنان المتعال
الله الله يا ربي يا الله
الله
يا ربي يا
الله
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Hussein Latifi and you're listening to a program for humanity from IRIB English Radio. I hope wherever you are, you're doing well. In this program, we talk about the concept of humanity and human being in the Holy Quran, different dimensions and aspects of this being. And in the previous episode, we ended up talking about human intellect and reason as one major faculty and one major dimension in the human soul. So we talked about different verses of the Holy Quran talking about the function and sometimes the obstacles against this faculty in the human soul. And we ended up talking about the relationship between reason and hawa, for example, hawa being the carnal desire, something that stops reason and sometimes captivates reason, taken as hostage and prisoner. A reason that is taken as hostage and prisoner cannot function well. And we talked about how the main struggle that we have in the Islamic teachings in general, in Quran and in Ahadith, jihad, jihadun nafs, means that one struggles to create a balance between reason, his reason, and the desires that are there. So in this episode, we should talk about some other obstacles in the way of correct and proper thinking. So some of these obstacles are counted in the verses of the Holy Quran. One of them is imitation or following the footsteps of others without any evaluation. So to do something that looks similar to the acts of others doesn't have a problem in itself, because some people think that they should always do something different in order to establish their independence, which is another form of problem, which is called like conceit or arrogance. So no, we are not saying that a person must do something, always must do something different in order to establish his individual his individuality and his unique personality. No, sometimes if you do things that look similar to the acts of others, but at the same time these are the results of your own independent thinking, still it is counted as a rational decision. But the problem arises when people they do things only because other people are doing that, and that is something against the reason. And we can see that even in today's societies, that some people decide to do stuff sometimes without even giving it a thought, just because the flow of the society is in that direction, they also follow the suit. There are several verses related to this habit and this behavior. We recite some of them, inshallah, in this episode, and if we get time, in the next episode. One of them is this beautiful verse. فَلَمَّا جَاهُمْ مُوسَى بِآيَاتِنَا. When Prophet Musa alayhi salam went to his people, قَالُوا مَا هَذَا إِلَّا سِحْرٌ مُفْتَرَى. One common label that would, or accusation that would be leveled against the prophets of God was this, that this is magic, this is sihr. وَمَا سَمَعْنَا بِهَذَا فِي أَبَائِنَا الْأَوَلِينَ. We have not heard something like this from our previous fathers, like ancestors, forefathers. As if it is something new, then we should reject it. In order for something to be correct, it should be among the, I don't know, the teachings among the heritage of the fathers. Well, this is not correct. This is not necessarily everything that comes to people from their forefathers is the true thing. So we will have a break and we come back to continue our discussion.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Hossein Latifi, and you're listening to a program for humanity. In this episode, we were talking about the role of tradition, following the tradition, following the social behavior, social habits, in stopping, in creating obstacles on the way of the reason. And we said, according to the verses of the Holy Quran, to do something that looks like the acts of other doesn't have a problem of and in itself, but the problem is that some people, without thinking about their actions, they just do them sometimes because of the social flow. Another verse, and we recited one verse about that, that people, when they wanted to reject the message of Prophet Musa alayhi salam, they said, the problem with this message is that we have not heard such a thing among the heritage that we have inherited from our forefathers. مَا سَمَعْنَا بِهَذَا فِي أَبَاءِنَا الْأَوَّلِينَ This is something new. This is not, this does not exist in the tradition that we follow. Or, for example, in another verse, we recite, وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ اتَّبِعُوا مَا أَنزَلَ اللَّهُ When they are told, follow what has been revealed from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Follow the revelation from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. قَالُوا بَلْ نَتَّبِعُوا مَا أَلْفَيْنَا عَلَيْهَا أَبَاءَنَا They say, we will follow whatever that have come to us from our fathers. بَلْ نَتَّبِعُوا مَا أَلْفَيْنَا Whatever that is within the tradition, within the habits and the common behavior of our fathers, we only follow that. أَوَلَوْ كَانَ أَبَاءُهُمْ لَا يَعْقِلُونَ شَيْئًا وَلَا يَهْتَدُونَ Quran asks a question. Does this following extend to limits that goes beyond the boundaries of reason? Do they still follow their forefathers, even if their forefathers did not think about something? لا يعقلون شيئاً. They did not think about something. ولا يهتدون. And they were misguided. So to what extent do you want to follow the tradition? Following the tradition in itself might not be bad, but have you even given it a thought that sometimes the tradition might not be rational, might not be thoughtful? So you should think about it yourself. You should spend some time pondering and contemplating about different aspects of that behavior. So this is a common attitude of the people in the past that would say it against the teachings of the Prophet. Also, we have it nowadays. Sometimes people, only because it is against the social norm, like, for example, hijab, some people say, well, this is not something that the people in the 21st century agree with, the majority of people. Well, it's not a basis for argument against something. The majority of people might be against something that is good, majority of people, for different reasons. So, Quran says this in itself is not a sufficient reason to reject something or to accept something. One should think independently about a behavior, about a belief, and then reject or accept it based on his own analysis and evaluation of it. Thank you very much for listening, inshallah. Until next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي
In the limelight.
To understand the unsavory alliance that has held the United States and the Zionist regime together is to understand that they are cut from the same cloth. Both regimes share a ruthless, exploitative settler colonial ideology and psychology that has set them on parallel social, political, and economic paths. They have existed by exploitation and churning the cauldron of division and conflict among countries in the region. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Palestine Chronicle wrote, after half a century of steadfast support, it has become virtually impossible for Washington to imagine a regional reality that does not have the fabricated regime of Israel at its core. The Israeli regime war on Gaza has been oiled by the military, financial, and diplomatic benefaction of the United States regime. While President Joe Biden makes passive public appeals for the Israeli regime to show restraint behind closed doors, he reaffirms America's continued support. The administration's recent indulgence of the Zionist regime was visible during a March 4, 2024 meeting in the White House between the Zionist regime's minister, Benny Gantz, and Vice President Kamala Harris. At that meeting, the vice president stated the administration's displeasure with the dire humanitarian crisis in Gaza, but in the same breath, told Gantz that the United States wanted to continue supporting Israel, but that Tel Aviv needed to do its part, stating, "Help us help you." The infamous hike that was seen around the world has come to haunt even a committed Zionist like Biden. In order to retrieve a modicum of domestic and international credibility, after the Zionist regime's massacre of more than 100,000 Palestinians, the administration has put on its humanitarian face. Salvage efforts that have been for Palestinians are obviously too timid and too late. The language, action, and inaction that has emanated from the Biden White House indicate that either the Zionist regime is calling the shots in Washington, or the administration is on board with the Zionist regime's genocidal plan to empty Gaza and the West Bank of Palestinians. It also seems evident that Biden, who has said on a number of occasions, "I am a Zionist," has been beguiled by the myths and fantasies that the Jewish regime has created. In the face of domestic and global condemnation, the U.S. administration has embraced the right-wing regime in Tel Aviv. It has continued to block United Nations resolutions calling for an immediate ceasefire. Recently, on February 29th, the U.S. regime alone, among the 15 members of the U.N. Security Council, opposed a statement expressing deep concern over the Zionist regime's military killing of Palestinians who had gathered near trucks carrying food to Gaza City. At least 112 were martyred and another 760 injured in what is now called the Flower Massacre. In a symbolic display of concern following the massacre, the U.S. regime began airdropping humanitarian aid into Gaza while simultaneously supplying the fabricated regime of Israel with bombs to drop on Gaza. During the U.S. administration's first photo op on March 2nd, the U.S. and Jordanian air forces dropped 38,000 meals to some 1.5 million Palestinians. Water and medical supplies were not included. Biden refused to blame the child killer regime of Israel for blocking aid into Gaza, but said he would insist that Israel open additional routes and allow more aid trucks to enter. In its eagerness to indulge the Zionist regime, the U.S. administration has been willing to break U.S. laws. The Biden administration has used emergency powers to bypass arms sales reviews and congressional oversight to expedite its arms transfers to Israel. It is currently violating the Foreign Assistance Act 1961, Arms Export Control Act 1976, War Crimes Act 1996, Genocide Convention Implementation Act 1987 to 88 and the Leahy Laws 1997 to 98. The White House is awash in rhetoric. It has, however, refused to put any real limits on the Zionist regime's violence, choosing instead to stoke the Israeli war machine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, for example, during discussions in February 2024 with the Zionist regime's leaders in Tel Aviv, sheepishly stated, "It will be up to Israelis to decide what they want to do, when they want to do it, how they want to do it. No one's going to make those decisions for them." The U.S. administration's actions, even when confronted with the Zionist regime's systematic violence against the Palestinians, clearly indicate that the U.S. financial and military hegemonic interests outweigh what little is left of its humanity. Like his predecessors, Biden has shown no genuine concern for the Palestinians, for the region and its people. He has, however, been dedicated to integrating the Zionist regime into the Arab West Asia region. To realize the Biden's integration policy, he has continued to expand on former President Donald Trump's objective of strengthening military cooperation and economic ties among family-ruled Arab dictators and the Zionist regime. He has pressed ahead with the Trump-era Abraham Accords, a set of Arab-Israeli normalization agreements initiated in September 2020 and signed by the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan. When the accords were initiated, the Trump administration and its Arab partners believed that Palestinians could be ignored, that they were irrelevant, and that they would simply accept their slow death. Biden has amplified that disregard. The U.S. administration is under the impression that deepening economic and military ties with Arab despots will lead to regional stability, which ultimately translates into U.S.-Israeli hegemony. It is worth noting that the region remains volatile, even though Riyadh and Tel Aviv have cooperated covertly for years, as have Bahrain, the UAE, Oman, Qatar, and Egypt. After close to 5 months of the Zionist regime's atrocities, Biden continues to push for what Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi once called the deal of the century, a normalization pact between Saudi Arabia and the Zionist regime. The United States regime sees Saudi Arabia as the integration linchpin. If Riyadh, the largest and wealthiest Persian Gulf country, allies with the Zionist regime, the White House believes that others will fall in line.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech,
the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
مهدی نراقی کتابی نوشت به نام جامع السعادات، یک کتاب اخلاقی بسیار ارزنده. مرحوم نراقی،
The late Mullah Mahdi Naraqi compiled a book titled جامع السعادات. This book is about Islamic morality and ethics. When he had a trip to the city of Najaf, he asked his students to accompany him to go and visit the late Sayyid Mahdi Bahrul Ulum, one of the greatest scholars of the time. This was the second time they went to visit the late Sayyid Mahdi Bahrul Ulum. This time, again, the late Sayyid welcomed the late Mullah Mahdi in a very cold manner. The last day of Mullah's stay in Najaf arrived, and he again asked his students to accompany him to go and visit the late Sayyid Bahrul Ulum for the third and last time.
بهش گفتن که آقا بستتونه دیگه، دوبار رفتی اونجوری باید برخورد کردن، بستت دیگه.
The students told the late Mullah Mahdi Naraqi that this is the third time you are going and we are afraid that Sayyid might welcome you coldly like the two previous times. Again, the late Mullah Naraqi stated, Sayyid is a master and we must go for farewell. This time, when the late Mullah Naraqi and his students went to the house of the late Sayyid, Sayyid left the house barefoot this time and went to the door to welcome the Mullah Naraqi warmly. The students of the Sayyid were shocked and asked him about welcoming the Mullah coldly for two times and warmly for the last time. Sayyid Bahrul Ulum answered, I wanted to know, does Mullah Naraqi practice what he authored in his book Jam al-Saadat or not? And I found him an alim with perfect practice. The late Sayyid Bahrul Ulum accompanied the late Mullah Naraqi barefoot and bid farewell to him. This is how the ulama of Islam respected each other. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.ir Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio, where we explore the Islamic upbringing of children and teenagers, guided by the wisdom of the Quran and the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt. Today, we are honored to have Sister Salma Khalfan, a distinguished Islamic researcher, with us to shed light on this important subject. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Salma. Thank you for joining us today.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for having me over.
Thank you so much for being here. So we have a question that we had been discussing in the past sessions, and it was about a 15-year-old daughter who doesn't talk about her problems to her mother. And the mother was concerned about how she should, you know, go about it. And you had given us very good tips, one of which was, you know, we have to try and be positive, we have to do active listening. Do you have anything more to say?
Yes, we talked about the fact that when a parent wants to talk to her teenage, a mother wants to talk to her teenage, she should capture a moment when the teenage feels like talking. Sometimes it so happens then that the mother wants to or the father wants to talk to them, but they're not in a mood of talking. So we should respect those moments of them, their privacies. True. Maybe they're so bottled up inside that they don't feel like, you know, relating and showing their weaknesses. Or maybe they feel like, you know, just talking to themselves, you can say, or just sleeping over it and forgetting a little about the pain. But then it happens so that they forget and they are easy a bit when time passes. And then when they so happen to want to talk about it, you know, because if they see that there is so much compassion at home, then they know that their parents relate to them, especially the mother. So she will, a teenage girl especially, would feel like talking, and she would then, you know, like ask the parent to listen to them. And therefore, this mother who wants to talk to her, whatever she be doing at that time, she should leave. Of course, apart from the other things that are so wajib, like prayer and everything. But of course, at that time, she should, you know, like capture that moment and
also helps remove the barrier, because sometimes those barriers are built between the parents and children, because the teenagers feel like the parents just don't understand them.
Yes.
They don't respect their, you know, boundaries and etc. So,
and why do they think that their friends do? It's because their friends do active listening.
Mm.
They are so, like, you know,
eager,
and they are so willing to listen.
True.
And they, you know, they share those sorrows with them also. So they know that there's a listening ear, and the best is the parent if she gives that listening ear. And mostly parents do that, but sometimes it happens so that the parents forget about this thing. They don't capture themselves as being young, you know, one day. One day all of us, the parents were also young, and they don't know how it feels to be in the skin of a young person.
Very true.
You know, they forget about it.
And I think sometimes parents resort to giving solutions straight away, or they judge them, or the teenagers feel judged. And
yes,
usually
yes.
From their friends,
absolutely,
they feel like, okay, no, they understand.
Yes, they don't judge them, exactly. So this is one part of active listening.
Yeah.
And then we talked about positive, being positive. always look at the bright side of things.
Yeah.
You know, like if we are so much negative ourselves, then the child will take that negative energy and feel more sorrowful over what matter they are maybe, you know, like feeling sad over.
True.
So however much at home we are supposed to be positive, to bring that positive nature about it, like what a good day I had today, such and such good thing happened. Maybe, for example, we did a good thing in the morning, and then we, you know, we enjoyed our breakfast. When we went, we saw this and we admired the beauty of the nature, or whatever be it, you know, some things that need to be mostly pumped in, like to the youth, that to bring about that positive nature at home.
True.
It's very important.
I think the vibe is very important.
Yes, the vibe.
So we'll just take a quick break and pick up shortly.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
This is IRIB English Radio, and we have been discussing about one of the questions that had been previously asked about a mother worried about her 15-year-old daughter who doesn't talk about her problems to her mother anymore. And you gave some very informative lessons in how to deal with the teenagers. So did you want to expand on those?
Yes. Another way to open up a conversation with her teenage daughter is maybe focus on their interests. This is very important that, you know, when a person is interested in something and probably you are not, you shouldn't, you know, forego that as something that, or take it for granted.
Yeah.
For example, if your daughter is interested in crafts work or maybe some creativity or artwork or cooking or, you know, anything, reading. So know that subject as, you know, take it seriously. I guess when a parent is really caring, it happens.
Yeah.
That when a parent is caring, they see even the boy's interest or the girl's interest, and they search on that. And they want to see more on that, maybe documentaries or read about it, and then talk to them about it. Yeah. So they know that this, my parent is sharing my interests with me.
True.
So they have more to talk about. So what happens is that when they see that the small stuff is not taken for granted, you know, like small hobbies or things that they like, or remembering their favorite color, remembering their favorite dish and things like that, or what they like and discussing about it and giving a comment on that, that they know that, that the parents share their interests about the small stuff, so they will also resort to in the big matters.
Very like, true. You know? I think many teenagers go through this, that you know, nobody understands me and nobody really cares for me. And however much you go and tell them, no, we care, no,
yeah,
they have to see
that's
through
not
action.
Enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So when parents actually show interest in what they're doing, not just for the sake of it, no, actual interest. And teenagers are very smart. Yeah, they know when the parents are just saying,
yeah,
or actually,
exactly, yeah,
feeling or doing something for, yeah, the sake of that.
It's so nice that if a daughter is so much, you know, like taken up with the interests of the parent, like sometimes, you know, in creativity, a mother likes to stitch. So the child even feels that, you know, urge to,
yeah,
want to explore that field and stitch and everything. So both can discuss so well on that matter, or cooking or anything, reading, for instance, or, you know, like matters that are like political matters of the day-to-day time, and they can discuss on that too, or a subject for that matter, for example, English literature, or literally subject like Nahjul Balagha,
yeah,
the eloquence of it, and, you know, parents, or Quran, for instance. Parents can discuss so much with the children, you know, that really gives a big you know, hard to the parents especially. But however, we say that if the child has different interests, probe on those interests and see what the goodness comes out of it. And maybe here and there you can comment on that, and you can ask them, have you discovered this part of your interest, you know,
yeah.
And this part, this interest of yours has these kind of advantages, or what did you do about it? Maybe have you done anything new, you know, like
exactly.
For example, art is concerned. It's a very good, you know, like talent. But of course, it has to be like taken seriously and discussed about and shown interest.
Very true, very true. So let's just have a short break and we will continue shortly.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back, and we have been discussing about what to do to have a better relation with your teenage children especially. And Sister Selma has been telling us a lot about how to deal with that, you know, focus on their interests, show interest in their interests, and that will really build a bond.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you want to say more on that?
Yes. Another thing that I want to point out is avoid talking too much. Although we just discussed about how there should be a verbal interaction between the parent and the child, the teenager, that, you know, you have to know about their interests and everything. But here, avoid talking too much in the other times.
Yeah.
For example, however much you speak to an adult who's your age or something, try to, you know, hear out more from your teenager.
True.
In fact, even from your children. Mm-hmm. They have so much to let out, their energy and everything. And then you should lend the listening ear. And especially, teenagers don't like you to advise them and to give a lecture, or, you know, like talking too much in the sense of giving them a lecture, or, you know, even telling them about your own things.
Yeah.
They like to be listened to. And in fact, this is a universal thing, yeah? If you go and see, mostly people, when they're listened to, actively, they really appreciate that more than when you give your opinions,
true,
right?
True.
Even a friend, even somebody who is a soulmate, your best friend.
Your husband.
Yeah, they listen to you, you would appreciate that more. So avoid talking too much and, you know, excessively also, and also questioning them. That why did you do this? Why don't you do this? Why did you, you know, you made your own mistakes? So judging them,
yeah,
they would repel from that, and they would feel that, you know, just to turn a deaf ear on whatever we are saying.
True.
And they would not confide then. So to want to make a teenager talk to you is that try to talk less and listen more.
Okay? Showing that interest,
yeah.
Showing that,
yes.
You know, I'm here for you,
yeah.
And giving that full attention.
And also that you are supposed to talk more than me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then another thing is that admitting our mistakes. Sometimes when we make mistakes, we don't admit them, they pile up. When they pile up, the teenager feels that, you know, my mother is always in cross with me.
Yeah.
And she's always at loggerheads with me. So I can't relate to her. But if you admit your mistakes, then they know even how to admit their mistakes.
True.
They know that it's nothing wrong to do that. And that's why we have rights of a child also, rights of a, and especially when it comes to adult child, like for example, a teenager is now, has the right mind to decide between right and wrong. So he sees or she sees what's going on, and they don't like some things. So we shouldn't say that it's a child, he's my child, I have authority over them,
yeah.
You know. Although you have guidance and you share more authority, but you have no right to, for example, tease them or, you know, pass a comment that makes them feel hurt. So you should, like, even if you, for example, sometimes, you know, parents tend to joke about maybe the clothing style or the hairstyle. So the girl especially takes it very much at heart.
Yeah.
So this needs to be corrected before it's too late. So the parent should be sensitive enough to see what makes them feel bad, what makes them, you know, like comments that we talk to our friends about our girls when they are nearby.
Yeah.
So that we should be very careful and hypersensitive about it. That what makes our children feel bad, we should not, you know, stake that with the making the relationship.
Yeah. I remember even when I was a child, if even though there was something very simple, very small, you know, it wasn't even very important. But as soon as my parents would, you know, joke about it, I would take it very much to heart. Like, I'd feel like they're disrespecting me when they had no intention whatsoever. And after that, I think because my mother made a bond with me, I was able to communicate that. And then she realized, okay, no, then we shouldn't bring these matters about. And alhamdulillah, that really, you know, put my self-esteem up, because otherwise it's very easy to get a low self-esteem from that young age if the parents, you know, joke about them or tease their children too much with a good heart. But it has its, you know, stakes.
Yes,
as you said.
So last but not least, we should also consider one point, and that's very important for all ages, not only teenagers, in fact for adults as well, is that you should remind them that you love them. And not just, you know, oh, just remember that I love you. No, it's concentrating on that, pointing out the qualities, what you like, what you appreciate. And also acknowledge the fact that, you know, you receive that love from them. So it's not just one-sided, it should be two-sided. Acknowledge it, yeah? That remind them that how important they are in your lives. Remind them all these things so that they can feel that, empowered. Because love is the only thing that really empowers a person.
True.
Yeah, they'll feel so much trust and satisfaction. And of course, they'll have a better relationship with the parents as life goes on. Mostly, if you go and see when teenagers grow up to be adults, they say they were not close with their parents. And it's really a sad thing, yeah, to hear that a girl is not close to her parent. Why? It's because there was this communication gap between them. But the parent has to remind that, remember, you are very important for me. You know, we think that it's just small children who need to be cuddled and loved and hugged, but it's also elder children.
Definitely.
They need to have that even probably more, because they shouldn't look for it outside. You know, they know that they have a very strong relationship with their, at least one of their parents. They know that they can confide. They know that they can even embrace them and hug them and, you know, feel relaxed with them. So the parents should never refrain from that.
Very true, very true. So that was very, very insightful. And thank you very much for your valuable time, Sister Salma. And we hope to see you in the next episode. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening. You've just listened to IRIB English Radio, where we had a discussion on child upbringing. And if you want to listen to our programs or get more information, you can log on to parstoday.ir/en under the tab COI. Call of Islam. And if you type in Call of Islam Radio, you can find it on YouTube and Instagram. And you can email us on englishradio@irib.ir. Inshallah, God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
In the limelight.
Some Western champions of feminist cause have reserved their fury for the plight of Zionist women, ignoring the catastrophic suffering in Gaza. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, from the outset of the war on Gaza, an unsettling narrative has permeated Western media, portraying the fabricated regime of Israel as a paragon of civilization. Some pundits have even gone as far as reducing the Palestinian people to the level of the animal kingdom. Such bias is nothing new, further amplified in the UK by outlets such as Unheard, as media propaganda continues the unsettling tradition of misrepresenting the Arab community. But it has been unexpectedly troubling to hear such distortions echoed by British feminists and activists. If you're following the well-known UK feminist in hopes of finding a united outcry and empathy for the violence faced by Palestinian women and children, I'm afraid you will be deeply disappointed. Despite the International Court of Justice warning that the Zionist regime's onslaught in Gaza could plausibly be a genocide, some of Western feminists